WNTN 1550 AM and WNTN.com.
Boston's hub for international radio and specialty programs.
Interrupted that wonderful medley of Kalamatiana, Sirita, Ke Horeftika this morning. It is 10 o'clock. Happy New Year, everybody, once again. Time in our studios is 10 o'clock, and as we have mentioned, we are delighted to have joining us on the telephone David Paleologos. What a contributor he was to us in 2020 and 2021. First week, he's here with us. Big election last night. The state of Georgia. And I'm just going to leave the rest up to David. David, good morning. Kalimera, Chronia Pola, and every superlative I can throw your way. Happy New Year, David.
Happy New Year to you and your listeners. We can't believe we're talking about politics in early January.
January 6th. I guess, what's this, extra innings, overtime? What is this?
Sudden death.
Something like that. Something like that. David, good morning. How are you? I guess, and what I'm hearing is, you know, when I drove into work, undecided, but I'm, you know, hearing from various people that the verdict is out. What are you hearing?
Yeah, so the Democrats are going to have a sweep. It hasn't been certified yet, and it won't be until the Georgia election officials certify the election. But if you look at the remaining 3%, 4%, 5% that's out there in some of the selected counties, you know, even though 99% of the vote is technically in, the places where they're still counting are heavily Democratic. So both Democrats are going to win this election. There probably will be a recount, but maybe not. That remains to be seen. And then we potentially have a different makeup. We have a different Senate. You know, the majority leader changes from Mitch McConnell to Chuck Schumer, and then we move on from there. But the counties have until January 15th to certify, up to January 15th, to certify the results. And then if there isn't a recount petition, the Secretary of State will then certify them by the 22nd of January.
David, I'm just a little bit curious. So even with a 50-50 split, and we understand that the vice president is, you know, Democratic, so she controls, does he become the, and is it automatically a switchover? So he becomes the minority leader, Mitch McConnell now?
Well, technically, it's interesting because technically,
yeah,
McConnell stays the majority leader even with a 50-50 split until Pence leaves.
Okay.
Once Pence is replaced,
yeah, I understand,
and Harris is the VP, then it becomes then Schumer becomes the majority leader.
Okay. I want to also elaborate just for, you know, for my own understanding, and I'm sure many of our listening audience's understanding. We've been hearing a lot about is it today where Vice President Pence will address, and, you know, we were hearing, let's see, you know, he can do it. Yesterday he was tweeting, I can't change the election. I can't not certify, you know, what I see. I heard he was checking the, you know, back in the 1800s, he was checking things out to see, you know, exactly what the electoral college, you know, rule book cites.
Sure. Yeah. So, what happens is,
you know, what's the argument? I want to understand the argument.
Well, the process. The
process.
He can't.
Yeah.
He can't. So what happens is, at 1 o'clock, they will meet. Congress will meet in joint session. Pence will preside to certify the election results from each of the states, and they take each state alphabetically.
Yeah.
You know, so they'll start with Alaska, Alabama, or whatever, and each state will be certified. If there are challenges,
yeah,
by House and Senate members, and
which we're hearing there will be, right? We are hearing that
right,
there will be. Some people have publicly said they will challenge this, right? So I'm just trying to understand the whole process.
A number of House members who are Republicans, like 100 or so, and some Republicans in the Senate will challenge. what happens then is that Pence has to immediately disband the House and Senate joint session, which is the them together, and then each branch has to separately take up the charges, the challenges. So the House goes back to the House, the Senate goes back to the Senate, and then they have up to 2 hours to debate in each branch what these challenges are, and then to vote on it. So if there are, say, six states that are being, I don't know how many there are, but let's say there are six states that are going to be challenged, mm-hmm. you potentially have up to 12 hours of debate and then votes, on the certification process. So this could start at 1 o'clock and end at midnight. Potentially, if it in fact does end.
Is this televised? Will this be televised?
I think it will be televised on C-SPAN for sure, mm-hmm. all the C-SPANs, and it probably will be televised at different points. They'll cut in and out on the major
networks.
Stations because people are going to be glued to their TVs to see this process. I mean, it's more of a civics education than anything else, because I don't think a lot of people realize that, you know, the election isn't certified until early January of the following year after a November election for president.
Mm-hmm. Just the whole, do we have any protocols, anything before this? Do we have any other, you know, I can't think of any other challenges or
not recently. You'd have
right?
to go back 150 years, and then there's a whole set of dominoes that happened. Like you saw overnight, the NASDAQ dropped dramatically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's kind of recovered today in trading because the Wall Street doesn't like any one party controlling all of the branches,
mm-hmm.
because they like gridlock, the Wall Street does. But, you know, but you're looking at not only Schumer in charge, but all these chairmen are going to be different for these key committees. I mean, you've got Senator Menendez, for example. You know, he will probably take over the Foreign Relations Committee. Remember, Menendez was under a lot of scrutiny. You know, he was actually tried on federal corruption charges a couple of years ago, which he beat. Mm-hmm. You know, he was acquitted. But you also have a very interesting scenario, because I think Wall Street gets panicked, mm-hmm. when progressives are in power. But you've got Bernie Sanders, who would be in line, technically, he's the first person in line for the powerful budget committee. Now, the budget committee is important because, you know, we have a $3 trillion deficit this year,
mm-hmm.
biggest since World War II and so on. And our national debt is $27 trillion. So you're talking about Bernie Sanders, who really has a different opinion about whether or not we should have a contained and controlled budget, who would be chairman of the budget committee,
mm-hmm.
under a Biden administration.
Yeah.
You know, now there's a way that Biden could get Sanders out of that.
Mm-hmm.
If Biden didn't want Sanders to be in charge of the budget committee, and that would be to appoint him a cabinet secretary, and that's also a possibility. Sanders could become labor secretary or another part of the Biden administration, which would then create an opening for Sanders's Senate seat in Vermont.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
But then that gets complicated too, because the person who fills that seat, if Sanders were to vacate and take a cabinet secretary, is appointed by the Vermont Republican governor, Phil Scott, and he's a Republican. So he would appoint a Republican. So I don't know that that's going to happen, but it does get complicated. But I think people thinking about Sanders as chairman of the budget committee,
mm-hmm.
you know, might rattle not only some Republicans, but some Democrats too.
David, what would you say? I have friends, you have friends, some are extremely conservative. Some are extremely liberal. Some are in the middle. The conservative, shall we say, audience out there right now is not very happy. And they, you know, I'm talking to some of them as we speak. You know, I don't know why they're sending me their opinions. But my question to you is, you know, in your opinion, what changes are we going to see? Or are we going to just ride this out? You know, you got to be realistic. You know, you're hearing that socialism word. And I'm just curious what you think about those who have that opinion.
Yeah, I don't with the Senate so closely split at now 50-50, I don't think you're going to see blatant socialist policies like a massive tax increase. I think Democrats are savvy enough.
They have to be. They have to be. They have to realize that.
Biden and Pelosi have been around a long time, and they know how dangerous, and they've seen in their lifetimes in politics how raising taxes kills Democrats' chances next election.
Yep.
So I don't think that's going to happen. But you could see some stuff get passed that both parties agree on, like infrastructure. You know, I mean, you've got roads and bridges at the federal level and even at the state level that are just falling apart. I mean, they're, you know, it's a great way to hire people to get, you know, to get your, you know, your roads resurfaced, bridges. Infrastructure helps transportation. It helps housing. It helps real estate. You know, both Democrats and Republicans can get behind that. And so I think that that's something that's a real possibility. I know Chairman Neal personally, and he's been talking about this for a year in the House, you know, with Chairman Pelosi. So I think there's enough Republicans who could get behind that, because they're all going to look better if they pass infrastructure, because everybody benefits. You're going to have more people hired. You're going to have more people spending money again and being out. And with the resurgence of travel, it's going to be helpful. The problem is, what's that price tag going to be, and how are you going to pay for it? And that's where it's going to get a little bit dicey. You know, how do you, what's the package going to look like, the infrastructure package? It's not cheap. And so how are you going to pay for that? And that's where it's going to get, you know, that's, I think, where the rubber hits the road.
Yeah, right back to, you know, the nuts and bolts of it all, David. Just, you know, grind it out.
But
we've got to grind this out.
I get the same mail you do. You know, at least people are entrusting you because you're a steward of their of their opinions, and you're not, you know, you're not going to blab it out on the radio. But I've gotten hate mail from both sides. You know, you come out with a poll showing Republicans leading, the Democrats whack you, vice versa, and it happens every election year, so I'm kind of immune to it. It's actually funny. But I actually do reply to people. They can call me names, you know, up and down in an email, but I'll still reply to them and try and explain to them, well, you know, what a poll means and what it says and what its limitations are.
David, can we switch over a little bit to the COVID? You know, this week the numbers are huge. I'm sure you're hearing from, you know, Marty Walsh, the city of Boston, just pushed it out another 3 weeks. We're hearing terrible numbers. I think that each and every one of us, including probably each and every one of our listening audience, knows somebody who's either been has the disease, had the disease, the sickness, whatever you want to call it. People that have died. We're at the point that, you know, we know enough people in our own circle that unfortunately, you know, lives have been lost. Where do you find the confidence, the citizen confidence? Where does all of this put us? And now that it looks like it's pretty clear that the presidency as well as the Senate, you know, is going to go to the Democratic side, what effect will that have on opening up and closing up? Because a lot of people, you know, you talk to people and, you know, if you're in Florida, which is, you know, the majority of it is Republican, you know, it's a lot different than here in Boston. And then we're hearing, and I heard this morning on a news report that the UK, you know, one out of every 50 people is infected, and it's just crazy. So what's your take on this? How can you, you know, how can we get through this and rationalize it?
Well, on the public opinion side, we know that people have resolve, which is they're willing to hunker down as bad as it's been and as much as it's hurt our celebrations, our holidays, the inability to go to sporting events and concerts.
Mm-hmm.
People recognize how serious the issue is. So that's a good thing. The one of the things that has a lot of people nervous is that not everybody wants to take the vaccine right away. It's, you know, depending on the survey, you're looking at less than half the people want to take the vaccine right away, which is not going to help. You need to have 75%+ taking the vaccine. So that's a problem. And right now, it was announced this morning, there's two new strains of the virus. One, as you mentioned, was in the UK. The UK strain has morphed into a faster moving strain. It's not more dangerous, but it spreads faster, and it's begun to pop up in the United States. So that's a problem. And secondly, there's a new strain that's originated out of South Africa, which is now starting to pop up in the U.S. And what they're seeing now is that the treatment, not the vaccine, but the treatment for people who have COVID is not working on this new super strain that's coming out of South Africa. So, I mean, I think the idea that everything will be perfect come April is a little bit overly optimistic. I think we'll get this under control, but it's going to take a little bit. And it's also going to take the pharmaceutical space to realize that as long as this thing continues to linger and people don't take the vaccine right away, mm-hmm. you increase the probability that the strain is going to morph into something different. And that's potentially a problem as well. So, you know, like 9/11, you know, an airport is not the same because of 9/11. And our lives aren't going to be totally the same because of this. So, you know, we're going to get back to normal, but there are going to be some adjustments that we make, just like we make in an airport now, you know, like, you know, we didn't have to before 2001.
David, have you traveled at all since this? I don't recall you traveling too much.
I have not. I have been a hermit.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm driving the lovely Gail totally bonkers, but mm-hmm. I have been a hermit, working and lingering around the house. It's great for me, for my business, because I'm able to do multiple interviews, both, you know, television and so on. You know, in the old days, I'd have to travel to the news station. It would be 2 hours in traffic for like a 2 or 3 minute hit
mm-hmm.
on a TV station, and then 2 hours back because traffic was so bad. Now I can do 6 or 7 TV interviews. Not that I've done a lot of those, but, you know, I could do multiple interviews just by, you know, doing them remotely. So mm-hmm. business-wise, I haven't really lost any steam on that front, but, you know, it does, being in close quarters, obviously, we're all experiencing it with our children and our parents and so on. So it's that's the thing I worry about after this vaccine is over. It's just the psychological impact and how much longer people can stick this out, because it's been a while and people's patience.
It's been 10 months. You know, we were talking a little bit about this yesterday, how things have changed and we're into a hybrid. I'm curious, you know, you would travel to 2 hours to go to some Connecticut, you know, television station to be on for 2 or 3 minutes. You've done that, you know, not your first rodeo and stuff like that. Do you miss that? Are you able to convey your message in your own opinion as well? I mean, on the radio, you're doing a great job. You've been in here and it's great. And, you know, I like it more when we're face to face, but I don't think we're losing that much doing, you know, at least the, you know, the audio part to the masses.
Yeah.
What about the television part? Do you feel a disconnect, or do you, you know, if I see you in the studio, or if I see you on a Zoom film, you know, I'm probably more apt to enjoy you on the Zoom film because I know you and I can make fun of, you know, what Gail put in the, you know, pretty picture. But I get it. You know what I mean? I've done a couple of Zoom meetings and Debbie's got me all prepped up. You know, that's just how it is. But so you know, you don't feel as if you're missing anything. This has been a benefit in a sense.
No, you know, it's worked out for me personally
yeah.
better. But I think, you know, if I were 20, 25 years old
yep.
and I wanted to, you know, push my business card in the hands of the news director and the editor and go around and schmooze with everybody because
mm-hmm.
I was at the front end of my career, I'd probably be very upset that I'm not in a studio, that I'm just on some Zoom call. But where I'm at, I need just to maximize how many times I can get Suffolk on TV on different stations.
Sure.
And the best way for me to do that is on the Zoom platform.
Yeah.
But as I say, everybody else is, you know, everybody's different and everybody has different objectives. And I don't miss it. I mean, I did a lot of it for many years of just running around, but I can't tell you, like, how many interviews on, even locally on NECN or Channel 5, I nearly missed by like 2 minutes.
2 seconds,
running into
yeah.
the studio, yeah. sweating, mm-hmm. you know, trying to mop up my face to make the, because traffic was so bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So now that this is, you know, I guess almost a done deal. I mean, nothing, you know, nothing would surprise me. But tonight is, isn't it? When is this all starting? Is this at 1 o'clock?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
Yeah.
So, pretty much, I think what you're alluding to is that tomorrow we will have a president-elect official, and then the ceremony is what, January? When is the swearing in?
Oh, the inauguration.
Inauguration is,
yeah.
What's that date?
In 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
And, all right, so that happens. That day comes. That day goes. What are your opinions on what are we going to hear? You know, is Donald Trump going to become very quiet all of a sudden? Or do you think we're going to, you know, do you think he's going to kind of just let it go and start focusing on his business again? Or, I mean, there's still, you know, there's an awful lot of people out there that still
yeah,
support him wholeheartedly.
Yeah, you're right. And they're in D.C. protesting. You know, you've got mm-hmm. the Proud Boys and a number of organizations that are going to try and make one final stand today in Washington, D.C. The National Guard's been called in, and you've got counter-protesters like Antifa and Black Lives Matter. So the possibility of a violent clash is higher than normal. So there's a lot going on in D.C. But as I say, it's exactly 2 weeks from the official inauguration, which is January 20th. And
mm-hmm.
we'll know, you know, beyond that, whether or not Biden comes in aggressively with a policy. I mean, keep in mind, you know, he was in the Senate for many years, and he's got friends who are Republicans. I mean, they've
sure.
broken bread together, they've traveled together, they've gone on vacations. You know, he has friendships of people, not who are just Democrats. So, you know, using Biden's longevity, everybody says longevity and being old is bad, but in this case, it's probably a good thing to try and mend and heal the country. The country is definitely in need of healing because you've got two different sides. I mean, we just did our last national poll, you know, showed 78% of Republicans say that Biden was not legitimately elected. 78%.
That's an incredible number. And, I know 100 Republicans, and I can tell you probably 80, not 78, that feel that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not, Republicans are not a fringe group.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's one third of the country.
Right.
You know, if you think Democrats, Republicans, and independents are a third each. And, you know, that's a big number. And so if you're Biden, these people don't believe you were legitimately elected. You have to represent them. You're the president of all Americans, as Biden said. So it's going to be a very tough slog, you know, in those first few weeks to try and not only win over the Senate, but also the American people who don't believe he was legitimately elected. And that's the great divide right now. And today's protests won't make matters worse. And the challenges in Congress isn't going to help matters, but people need to be heard. And, you know, this isn't communist China. Everybody has a voice,
mm-hmm.
and they have a right to you know, we have a constitutional right to protest.
Yeah.
And whether it's real or perceived that Biden did not win legitimately, that's what America's all about, and people need to be heard, and hopefully the country will be stronger because of it.
Yeah. Listen, wrapping it up, let's look into the crystal ball. The next senatorial races will be in 2 years, if I'm not mistaken, and it's already 2021. So what senatorial seats will become available in 2 years? In your opinion, are we going to see more people? Is it going to stay Democratic? We're going to start to see a Republican resurgence. What's the 2 year crystal ball look like today?
Yeah, so I mean, Massachusetts, we're not going to have anything in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. but you know, you're going to have a bunch of seats that are going to be up. A lot of them are Republicans, like Rubio. Rubio's going to be up in Florida. You know, you're going to have a bunch of other races that are going to be contested. You've got Richard Burr, North Carolina. He's going to be up. Senator Tim Scott, another Republican, is going to be up.
There's going to be several Democrats up as well, I'm sure, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, you've got Arizona, you've got Mark Kelly,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Michael Bennett from Colorado. He'll be up. I don't know what, you know, Kamala Harris's seat is obviously going to be a seat that's going to be filled by a Democrat. I don't know which Democrat is going to run for Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got some older folks, you know, like Patrick Leahy in Vermont. He'll be up, and there's a bunch of people. So, you know, I think, you know, you're going to have some kind of like a steady slog. And you've got a lot of older people. I mean, I'm looking at both Democrats and Republicans, Teddy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these people are older. Grassley in Iowa, and Patrick Leahy, who's a Republican, and Patrick Leahy, who's a Democrat in Vermont.
How old is Leahy?
You know, oh, he's got to be in his 80s. I mean, he's up there. He's been in forever. And then in New Hampshire, you got Maggie Hassan. Hassan will be up. She's a Democrat, but New Hampshire is a very fickle state. That could go either way.
Yeah.
You know, a Republican could potentially run or a Democrat, you know, depending on her policies.
David, what is the typical schedule of a United States senator? When are they in D.C.? Are they there? I mean, when you're 84, 85 years old, God bless them for having the energy and, you know, the commitment, no matter what side of the aisle they're on. But what is the physical and the mental strain on these people that we might not know? I mean, what does it truly involve? How many hours traveling back and forth? You're in D.C. half the time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got three types of senators. You've
mm-hmm.
got
okay.
the senators that are great with constituent services. They're always answering mail. They're always coming back to their district and holding district meetings. Then you've got people who are just big thinkers and policy people. And I would put like Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and others in that category. And they're more about creating programs that are going to change the world, not only the U.S. and the world. And then you've got senators. The other third are people who just go on travel missions all the time. They're traveling to the Middle East. They're meeting with foreign leaders. They're traveling, you know. And that's really the combination of what it takes to be a good U.S. senator. The senator that has a balance of having good constituent services can have big ideas as well, and also educates themselves by traveling and meeting world leaders is the successful senator. In addition to that, senators have, many of them have chairmanships, so they're on important committees that are specific to their expertise. so that if you're a physician, you go on the science and technology
committee.
If you're a former teacher, you go on the education committee, and so on. And then there are subcommittees off of each committee so that you can tackle specific problems. So there's a lot there. And, you know, the good news for senators, U.S. senators, is that the term is 6 years, and that's a lifetime today. Because so much can change and so much can happen in 6 years, and you don't have to spend your time running for office constantly like you do when you're in Congress or a state legislator or whatever, where you get elected and then you immediately have to raise a ton of money for the election in 2 years. Mm-hmm. At least in the Senate, you have 6 years to be thoughtful and deliberative. And as we know, the Senate has been called the greatest deliberative body in the world. Mm-hmm. And it is, because senators don't have to spend all their time raising money and campaigning. They can actually do good work, and that's the intent of it.
Mm-hmm. No term limits on senators. You can be a senator.
No term limits, period.
Yeah.
That's why Leahy is still
there.
Leahy and Biden was still there.
You know, I really have mixed opinions about that, you know, no matter who it is. I really do. I don't know. I mean, we've been term limits, two words that we've been hearing about ever since
We should go back to the ancient Greeks and do the sticks.
There you go.
Put the sticks, you know, everybody draws a stick, and the stick that has the different the different length is the one that serves.
There
total,
you go.
It's total random selection. It's perfect as a pollster.
David, always a pleasure. Anything closing for the audience?
Yeah, keep an eye out on two types of polls that we're going to be working on in the next 6 to 8 weeks. We're going to start polling the Boston mayor's race, and that's probably a topic for another call.
Mm-hmm.
And also governor of Massachusetts 2022. We'll start polling that in the spring.
When is the mayoral race?
This year.
2021.
Yeah.
2021.
Yeah. So there'll be a preliminary election, and then the final will be in November.
Yeah. Just to run down that again, there will be a preliminary election, and that will determine what?
The top two.
The top two. And they could be both in the same party.
More than two. Yeah.
And they could.
Yeah, it's not a. The mayor isn't a party. A lot of people don't realize this, but mayor is not a party. You don't run as a Democrat or Republican.
Right.
For mayor, it's a municipal thing.
Yep.
Even though most of the time it's a Democrat, you know. But it's a lot of fun because there are, you know, a number of candidates who are considering running, and you know, you've got some persons of color, it's going to be an interesting race. I don't think that Marty Walsh is in any trouble, but you never know. You know, you just don't know.
Yeah. We'll see. Time will tell. The game goes on. The wheel rolls. The spokes keep going. David, thank you very much.
Of course.
I look forward to seeing you face-to-face, Dave. And,
likewise.
Know, breaking a little bread, my friend. We'll do it soon, I hope. God willing.
It will happen sooner.
That's it. David Palaiologos, Suffolk University, joins us. A great contributor to Grecian Echoes. Thank you, David. Yes, bye-bye.
Of course.